TED Audio Collective.
I've mentioned this on TED Business before, but after I graduated from college, I started a set of nurseries and literacy centers for kids in Accra, Ghana. I initially traveled to Ghana to visit my family, and when I was there, I realized that more could be done to educationally support kids under five. So I made it my mission to do something about this. I knew I was just one person, an outsider at that, and there were many people already doing this type of work. So I applied to foundations for funding, and I also partnered with the people on the ground, local NGOs working to give children access to pre-K education. This kind of small-scale change isn't something I could have done alone. In order for projects like these to be successful and sustainable, you need good partners. I'm Madhu Bakinola. This is TED Business. Our speaker today is Carlos Rodriguez Pastor. He's a businessman and philanthropist who has tackled some of the most seemingly insurmountable issues, like education, healthcare, and infrastructure in his home country of Peru. In this conversation with our TED Business curator, Corey Hajim, he tells us how he bridged the gap between private industry and public partnerships. Then after the talk, I'll discuss some approaches to forming meaningful partnerships in order to make social change. But first, a quick break.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Canva. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Frances Fry.
And I'm Ann Morris.
And we are the hosts of a new TED podcast called Fixable.
We've helped leaders at some of the world's most competitive companies solve all kinds of problems.
On our show, we'll pull back the curtain and give you the type of honest, unfiltered advice we usually reserve for top executives.
Maybe you have a coworker with boundary issues, or you want to know how to inspire and motivate your team.
Give us a call, and we'll help you solve the problems you're stuck on.
Find Fixable wherever you listen.
So let's start with education. What was the problem you saw there?
So let me just put it in context and tell you a little bit about Peru. Peru is a middle-income country. It's right in the middle of South America on the Pacific coast. And from 1990 to 2010, or actually 2017, we grew our economy at close to 5%. So it's one of the fastest growing economies in the world, and certainly the fastest in South America. So we were feeling pretty good about all the things were going on in Peru. And it seemed like there was a possibility that eventually, 25 years from now, we could become a developed country. But there are a lot of hurdles along the way that we have to overcome in order to get there. And some of them include the basic things that happen in most developing countries, like education, healthcare, infrastructure. Now, during the same time, I remember in about 2007, they did an assessment of all the public school teachers. And the results were not very encouraging. A very small percentage passed basic math, basic reading comprehension. And in the year 2000, we were ranked last in the PISA rankings, which are these rankings for 15-year-old kids in various countries. And 12 years later, we were also dead last. So despite all this growth, we had a real issue to improve our education system. And So we decided to get involved to understand what was going on, because it was obvious that we could not become a developed country with having world-class education and healthcare.
And you said that the public schools were in rough shapes. And you were saying it's not just the way it looks, it was what was going on inside.
Yeah, so this is a typical public school we saw when we started our research. It kind of looks dark outside. But what's worse, it's what's going on inside. Kids aren't learning. Low attendance, low engagement, and poor quality. And as a result of these public schools, a lot of small, informal private schools started popping up all over the country. And they were just as bad as some of the public schools. And so we went to one of these schools, and I remember going with a couple of colleagues and asking a lot of questions to the person who gave us the tour. She didn't believe that we were parents with kids looking to go into those schools, but she was getting suspicious and asked us to please leave because she was the director and also the owner. And before she left, we asked her one final question. Before we left, we asked her one final question, and that is, why did you decide to do a private school? And her answer surprised us. She said, because it's more profitable than a Chinese food restaurant. Now, sadly, this is a level of commitment in a lot of these private schools. So we decided it's time to do something about this.
Not quite the right motivation. Education is so complicated. So when you started this journey, what were your goals?
Well, I didn't know anything about education except from being a student and a consumer of it for many years. So the first thing I did, and this is a true story, I watched every TED Talk on education.
I promise it's not a plant.
No. And then started reaching out to the different people I thought were interesting and were doing wonderful things there. And then I grew up partly in California. I worked on Wall Street, so I started looking at my contact list. And I remember an innovation company that when I grew up in California, that was always, you know, behind a lot of the product innovation. So I called them up, IDEO. And with them, along with Sal Khan, who we were introduced with, and some academics from Berkeley and from Harvard, we put together a system to really try to change education in our country. So in Peru, we have 8 million K-12 kids. And our target was about 1.6 million of those kids over time, which we call the emerging middle class. And what we co-designed was a system that had four characteristics. The first one, it had to be affordable. And by affordable, I mean $150 a month for the regular students, and for our scholarship students, $1 a day. Second, it had to have academic excellence. These are schools that had to move the needle. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense. And they're well-designed, they're modern, they were safe. Third, we wanted a project that was scalable. Not just to build one or two schools, but why not aspire to build hundreds of schools and perhaps cross borders and go to other countries? And fourth, we thought it was very important that the schools be sustainable. And sustainable is kind of our code word for profitable.
Yeah, so profitability. Let's talk a little bit about that. Why is that so important? Because we talked about the woman in the Chinese restaurant and that she didn't seem properly motivated. So why for you is profitability so important?
I think it's very important because that way we can keep building more schools and we can go across borders and keep this project going. You know, it's very ambitious. It's very ambitious for the teachers. So I imagine someday in some neighboring country, you know, a mom and dad having a conversation about to send their kids to school. And maybe one of the parents say, hey, what about that school where the Peruvians are teaching? So imagine that. Going from last in education in the world to being the teachers of our region. That would do so much to the self-esteem of our country, Peru.
All right, so that goes back to what you were saying about sustainability. Profitability for you equals sustainability. So there must be some trade-offs that you're making to make these schools reach profitability. What are some of those trade-offs?
Sure, when you start kind of with a fixed, you know, price that you can charge, there's, you can't do everything. So sometimes our students have to share tablets. We don't have swimming pools, but we have very nice spaces where kids can learn, they can collaborate. We use a blended learning model, which is solo learning and classroom learning.
So let's shift gears a little towards healthcare. What did you want to do there, and what have you done in that space?
So healthcare was as broken as the education system. Maybe the slight difference is in education, you have to have a real sense of urgency. Otherwise, you miss the entire generation. And in healthcare, we are fairly lucky that we still have a young population. So perhaps we have a little more time to go through this. But, you know, our healthcare system is a universal healthcare. 8 million informal workers have that for the government. And then 4 million pay a tax of the formal economy. That's slightly better. There's a lot of informal, just like the private schools, and they'll offer 2-for-1 medical procedures. You know, it's kind of, you know, not
bring
not
a very, friend.
Exactly, it's not not good quality. So again, we teamed up with IDEO and a lot of different institutions to design something for the emerging middle class. The first call in Peru is pharmacies. So if you're sick, you go to the pharmacy first, because you waste a whole day and you really can't afford to leave work for a day. So right around the time we started Innova, we got involved in buying a small chain of pharmacies that today has 2,300 locations throughout the entire country, including the most remote areas you can imagine in the Amazon, where you have to go in canoes and ships to get there. And as an extension of that, we also developed a clinic called Aviva, where we give good quality, about 40 to 60 beds in each one of our clinics. We're focusing on the most important part of life, which is birth. So now we have an alternative to give good healthcare to the emerging middle class.
Now, another thing you've dipped your toe into in a pretty big way is infrastructure, and that's a whole different kind of project. And you did it through a public-private partnership. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about and how it worked?
So years ago, I remember going to Arequipa, which is the second largest city in Peru, with my father and my grandfather. And in that visit, hearing about a bridge that was going to be built. Years later, I went back, and I heard about the bridge again. And it turns out that this bridge has been on the planning board for over 50 years, and it never got done. No, it was because this party was in power, that whatever the reason, it just didn't get done. So a few years ago, the government came up with a very clever plan. It's called Projects for Taxes. And what that does is it allows companies to use up to 30% of the taxes they pay, instead of paying it to the central government, to use it for projects that the community needs. They have to be peer-approved by the government, but then you kind of do it yourself. So we teamed up with the largest beer company in Peru and one of the large mining companies, and together we put $100 million of the taxes we would have paid to the central government, and we built this bridge, which connects, you know, one side of the city to the other. It was done on time, done on budget, no corruption, no drama. The bridge is still standing. Now, you know, thousands of people every single day use this bridge and, as a result, improve the quality of their life. This is a very good example of how private-public partnerships can work. And what we've done in our group is we've set a goal to have an iconic project in every one of the 25 states across Peru. So far, we've completed 5 in 5 different states, so we have 20 to go, but we're excited about that.
When I read about that, I thought that was such an interesting project and an interesting partnership. So a lot of the businesses you've started and your projects are focused on the middle class. So why are you so focused on that particular segment of the population?
So the middle class for the last couple of decades has been the fastest growing segment of the country. It was, in a way, low-hanging fruit. A lot of services were unmet, and so we tried to develop answers for those. And it was also a way to scale fast, because a lot of the emerging middle class is in urban settings. So you can actually go to zero, from zero to relevance relatively fast. What we're working on now is what we call the next frontier, which is rural Peru, which is still a big part of the population, and all the cities in our country that have 20,000 or less people. But really, the reason we got involved in areas like education and healthcare is that, you know, the government wasn't delivering. If you're familiar with Peru, you know what's been going on. We've had six presidents in 6 years. Now, the last president before the current one had so many cabinet changes that on average, every 5 days, we have a new cabinet minister. So ask yourself, if you're running an organization, you can't get even through the weekend. Maybe Monday he's here, Friday they're gone. And so it's very, very hard to get things accomplished from the government side. So what should we do? Should we wait for that Batman president to show up? Or should we get involved? And I have to admit that for many years, I would attend conferences and would do what a lot of people do, the golf clap, and then go back to your work and say, yeah, I'd like to help, but, you know, and then the next year, another golf clap, and kind of the same thing. But we really believe that the private sector has a very important role. It's 80% of the economy in our country. And we can really push the leaders along to take on the most difficult, the most challenging problems in the country. Because education takes 20, 25 years or more to solve. A political term, maybe only 4 or 5 years. So I think we have a more staying power. And we don't pretend to run the whole education system or to educate the 8 million kids that go to schools. But if we do our job correctly, maybe we can put it up at the top of the agenda. Maybe we can show how it can be done. We can continue to partner with the government and together, as a result, make a better country.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the things you've done, you've stepped in where government has fallen short. Do you feel like you're letting them off the hook, though, or do you feel that they're responding to this?
I would say it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. We're putting pressure to get these things resolved. I believe that, you know, by showing what can be done, you know, perhaps we can inspire them to work together, not just with us, but with all the other fine companies that we have in our country that do world-class things. But we can't just fold our hands and wait and hope that, you know, the Savior someday comes and helps us. And I think that's what's behind all these projects. We want a better life. We want opportunity. We want the ability to reach our dreams and go as far as we can go. So I have some suggestions. The first one is find out what are the most difficult challenges in your community, in your country, and try to understand them. Get involved. Put a sense of urgency. Raise your hand. Not someday. Make someday today. Second is seek out help. Most likely, the problem's been solved somewhere else. And you can add to that and continue to build. And the last thing is have a mindset where you're trying to make the pie bigger. And even if you come from the private sector, I guarantee you, if you focus on making the pie bigger for your country, you'll do well yourself. Our objective is to make Peru the best place to raise a family in Latin America. Our long-term objective is to push Peru to become a developed country. And that's really hard. And then it comes to execution. And this is where we lose a lot of that impetus, a lot of that, let's get it done, because it's hard. And what we found out is that when you have a big challenge, many times you'll say, yes, but. And that but follows lots and lots of excuses, right? In Peru, in Spanish, it's sí, pero. Pero is about P-E-R-O. So we decided to make it a little easier. And why not change that O to the U and wake up every morning and say sí, Peru.
Well, I think you can see why I admire this guy. thank you so much, Carlos, for all that you've shared with us. And I think we all have a lot of work to do. So thank you.
Thank you, Corey.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, click, click.
Writer's block. Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Canva.
Support for TED Business comes from Odoo. What's Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TEDbusiness. That's odoo.com/TEDbusiness. What really hits home for me in this conversation is Carlos's emphasis on partnership. I mean, Carlos partnered with government, IDEO, and beer companies. This is all a reminder that we can't make sustainable change on our own. And I loved the three areas he discussed in ending the talk, particularly the encouragement to think about what the most difficult challenges are and to get involved with urgency. How does this connect and resonate with you? What's the most difficult challenge within your organization that you think you could make so much better? Whose help should you seek? What partnerships can you engage with to change things? Maybe it's HR or the colleagues you spend the most time with. Maybe it's senior leadership. And how can you have a win-win mindset about solving the problem? Carlos is encouraging us not to think about change as who wins and who loses, but rather as an instance in which everyone benefits. That's it for today. TED Business is part of the TED Audio Collective, and this episode was produced by Hannah Kingsley Ma, edited by Alejandra Salazar, and fact-checked by Hannah Matsudaira. Special thanks to Maria Lajas, Farah DeGrunge, Corey Hagem, Daniela Balarezo, and Michelle Quint. I'm Madhupa Akinola. Talk to you again next week.